On any given weekday, actually almost any day, I get up, I take care of my home, I get into a car, or I don't, and at some point I end up in front of a screen or in front of something next to a screen, and I do the same thing for hours on end until it's done. That's what it's always been for me, always a process of walking up to a machine and engaging in some sort of activity loop until whatever it is I'm doing is done, or I have to go to sleep, or an external force or person requires me to go elsewhere. It's a very specific mental state I've always had, and while it's very hard to transfer what works for you for other people, it might be helpful to share what I've come to really understand about this mental state. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, Jeff Atwood, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. I'm not going to talk about Computer Shopper again, but I'm definitely scanning hundreds and then thousands and then 10,000s of pages. But I've done many other different processes throughout my life, with textfiles.com, going through all the hours of footage in various documentaries, reading through email, reading through items on the Internet Archive and making judgments. And wherever I've done this, I find myself going into a kind of fugue state, a process of doing the same thing with regularity and a small amount of mental processing, and finding that I can do it mostly forever. I think when I was younger, I really could do it with absolutely no other reference to anything external, no need to be distracted. The pure novelty of facing down uploaded and downloaded text files and giving them small descriptions and putting them onto different floppy disks and later hard disks, that was all I needed. I was 15, 16. Everything felt both joyously interesting and an underground, unseen thing that I was doing alone or with a very small number of contemporaries. When I got older and found myself sorting through piles of floppies or printouts or logging on and doing something over and over again, it was usually towards a very specific goal, something that I felt nobody else could do, that if I didn't move myself into doing this process and learn how to adapt living that way, we'd be doomed for various values of doomed. Time has taught me that's not the case. I think nothing is more corrosive than forcing yourself into something that you don't enjoy and aren't getting benefit from, simply because you've convinced yourself, blackmailed really, that there's nobody else out there to do the work. I don't think any of that is true. There's a unique style you might bring, there's a feeling you might have in how you do it and seeing how things represent your individual style, your individual pieces of personality that you bring into it. But it's going to be okay if you're not there. I spend a lot of time reaching out to people who I think are burning themselves out or reaching some sort of spiral to try to get them to understand that they aren't a critical link in an unbroken chain that will immediately fall apart without them. Projects do go dormant. Things do get picked up months or years later. And sometimes entropy is inevitable. Throwing yourself in between the gears just because you think you have to out of a self-described duty, especially when you do it in isolation and without sharing your pain, to me, now, feels totally misguided and destructive. So when I do a project now, I feel it needs me and I can do it well, but not representing a situation where I've blackmailed myself into thinking that it all falls apart the minute I turn away. We're very lucky these days. There's a whole background of educational content, of educational works, be they audiobooks, YouTube explainer videos, or radio programs that you can listen to. Find enrichment and expansion of understanding by listening to them while you do these repetitive tasks. If I'm sorting a pile of tapes or going through a pile of papers and putting them into smaller piles, and I can put myself in these two parallel situations, the automaton doing the four or five decisions that are necessary, and the person lying back and enjoying a beautiful work or an educational lecture, and emerging better than how I found myself at the beginning. One of the side effects of this is I've been moving more and more towards extremely long-form recordings, YouTube videos and audiobooks that go into the half dozen or dozen hours, simply because I don't need to spend the additional thought about where I'm going to line up my own playlist of neat things. Now, naturally, there's a whole bunch of really bad works out there. Simple attention-grabbing rants that don't have much more than a red Wikipedia entry driving them on the backside. But with a little bit of discernment, a little bit of looking things up and seeing how people respond, you can find the good stuff in the waves, the ocean of the bad. Every once in a while, I get a urge on my part to turn up some sort of long-form content, some sort of situation where I'm taking a subject, starting at the beginning, and then just moving for hours upon hours. I've been told people can use this to go to sleep. And maybe some somnambulistic rant from me is somewhere in the future. And if I need inspiration, I've been collecting a lot of names. Bobby Broccoli, Super Eyepatch Wolf, Quentin Reviews, where these creations start at one point, move on to the rest. Not necessarily endorsing their points of view or how they put things together, but just appreciating that mentally we start at the beginning, we are led through a tunnel of interesting ideas, and then we get to the end. In the meantime, there's that automaton. Most of my work is not doing the repetitive task, it's coming up with the processes for the repetitive tasks. The idea that when I look at something, if it's in one state, take this action, and if it's in another state, take this one. A small amount of if-then statements concocted in my mind about what to do with these things. Perhaps it's sad that in one way my tasks are becoming less customized. I have my inbox. It's petabytes large and millions of pages and thousands of tapes. It's really sitting down and determining how many parallel tasks I can do, how many tape machines I can have running, how much of a scanner I can keep flowing, and how many things I can say to people while doing all of this. To give it that soundtrack background of a podcast or a YouTube video, that's the working conditions. But the actual design, the actual coming up with it, is itself a fascinating hobby. A lot of things seem very insurmountable if you spend too much time really contemplating them. If I was to look at a pile of 600 tapes, I could look at these 8 or 9 large boxes filled to the brim with heavy pieces of plastic and then convince myself this is never going to be done. But anywhere between 4 to 9 months later, it's all a bunch of digital files and a bunch of packaged-up cardboard going off to a final destination. How it stands on its own, how we analyze it, how we describe it, these are other tasks. Things I can give to others because they're remote work. It's that air gap, that bridging of things in the world into the digital realm. That's where I put myself now, at this fulcrum that always needs a part. I think a lot of what drives me when I do these is to give myself a story, a motivation about why I'm doing it. that it's going to be something the world will appreciate, that I will enjoy watching it go by as it is done, that I have a small chance, as I have before, to become a temporary domain expert in something, simply because I have personally witnessed the hundreds or thousands of hours that something represents. For a short time, I was the expert on bulletin board systems. Luckily, my brain has done the right thing and jettisoned most of the memories, but I did make some finalized conclusions based on my observations. When bulletin board systems died, why people set them up, what they would represent to people, how they could go wrong, what mostly made them fade away, how different people approached these very odd machines and how they played a part. But I couldn't tell you which particular version of which software was released then or now. Couldn't tell you who the owner is of current types of software, and I definitely couldn't list out to you every modem manufacturer or every software title by rote. But it was through all of that work that I learned the story of the ARC-ZIP battle and understood it not as somebody who lived through it, but as an objective observer, taking all of the data in and presenting it to others. It's only through this sort of repetition that I find myself learning things. I've always been a terrible student. I know people may think differently based on how I can talk about certain subjects, but if I don't have an interest, nothing is retained. It just bounces off. You might as well not be talking at all, just mouthing the words for all I'm going to do with it. My grades hold this up. Gain my interest, I'll give you an A. Fail to do so, and I'm not going to pass your class. I'm just not going to get through. It's not how I'm built. So a lot of what I do to survive these incredibly repetitive tasks ranges, but I think it's pretty clear. Find an interest if you can. If not, find a way to think about it as little as possible, to have the fewest decisions. Find a story that drives you to get it done, even though you hate it. And where possible, bring in distractions, other sources of stimulation that don't overwhelm or drive you away from the project, but augment it. Nothing for me is more enjoyable than learning about an obscure historical figure or a strange situation that occurred years past, only to look down at the end of that story, only to find hundreds of pages and piles of data sorted, moved around, made better before I set in that morning. This advice may not work for anybody, but maybe this advice will. If you're struggling with your project, if you are driven to do something but find yourself unable to move in it, then you have a new project before that. Find collaborators. Find cheerleaders. Find people who will take you on the journey as much as you are taking them. People who are sharing your experience, who are as excited about what's going to be done as you are. The typical project management and interpersonal situations can definitely rise up, but I have found, at the end, life is a little bit easier, and it's a little more joyful and definitely more productive when it's done with friends. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bekoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, Ernie Hershey, Michael Rubin, Dileep Reddy, Sean Kelly, Trixie the Cat, Martin, Sembiance, and Anonymous, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. One of the side effects of this podcast being put on YouTube as it's syndicated is that YouTube has these very interesting viewer metrics. And what I've discovered because of them is that people leave while I'm saying those names at the end. People literally leave the theater during what they perceive of as the final credits. leaving a pretty small percentage back here. On one level, I suppose I could use that as feedback to change my format. But I don't think everything needs 100% engagement by 100% of the audience. I think that leads to a very boring experience, engineered for crowds and not for the person who is trying to do their best to make it. That said, thanks for sticking it out. YouTube says you're a rare, rare person.